Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, October 1st, 2007, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, Dr. Dick. That's me. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Look for the Video On Demand tab right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. I know a lot of you have questions about sexual performance issues. Hey, Doc, what's the best sexual position for butt fucking? How do you give a great blowjob? I want to try spanking, but I don't know how to begin. You know, stuff like that. Well, now, you don't have to wait for me to respond to your pressing queries. Just mosey on over to Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library and let some of the experts show you a thing or two. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, wonderfully enriching, and extremely informative videos right there on your computer screen. How sweet is that? Listen, I have a really luscious show for you today. But before we begin, I'd like to remind you of the Lickety Split Sex Advice Podcast voicemail hotline at 866-422-5680. This is a free, no pressure, voicemail kind of setup. No human will answer your call, least of all me. So don't be shy, my pretties. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Okay, on with the show. Today's first correspondent is Jose. He's 20. He writes from Norwalk, Connecticut. How can I approach a good stripper to get into sex? Even though they just strip, some do more off work. How do I know they are willing to do it? I'm going to go way out on a limb here and guess that English is not your first language, right, Jose? I think I understand what you're asking. Let's just hope that the women that you approach will also understand your meaning. So, okay, you know this fine stripper, and you want to have sex with her, right? Well, first thing you ought to know is that not all strippers are hookers. Some simply strip because they make really good money. They don't sell sex, mostly because they don't have to. The strippers that do offer sexual favors for a fee don't do so where they strip. It's bad for business, and I hasten to point out it's also against the law, except if you're in Nevada. And you are not. There are two really good ways to go about this hunt for stripper sex. First, you could ask the vixen out on a real date. Personally, I think this is the best way of going about getting laid by any woman. If the woman, stripper or whatever, is available for a date and you're not a total creepy putz, she might take you up on the offer. Just remember, many strippers already have a boyfriend, and he wouldn't look kindly on you trying to hustle his filly, if you catch my drift. Also, some stripping establishments prohibit their employees from fucking with the customers. If that's the policy at the joint you frequent, let it go. Don't pester the woman for something that will jeopardize her job. However, if she does accept the date, and all goes well, and you charm the pants off her, literally, you just might get a little slap and tickle. I just hope we're clear on the concept that any woman, especially a sex worker, who accepts a dinner invitation, it's not the same thing as saying that she will fuck you, right? Good. The second option is to ask the stripper if she does escort work on the side. Again, some stripping establishments prohibit their strippers from fraternizing with customers in any way, shape, or form, especially fucking them. You ought also know that if the woman in question is indeed an escort, as well as a stripper, your date, in quotes, with her is going to cost you. These women are professionals, so you do well to treat them with the respect you would offer any professional woman. Never, under any circumstances, offer to pay a stripper, or any woman for that matter, for sex. That would be pandering prostitution, and that's against the law. If the woman in question is an escort, she will be exchanging her time, the pleasure of her company, and her expertise for money. Not sex for money. Get it? If she's smart, she won't give you a second chance to get this right, so if you fuck it up the first time when you're asking her, you may be out of luck forever. My advice to you is, figure out ahead of time which way you want to go on this, a real date or an escort hookup, then approach her like a gentleman. If she is not interested, respect her decision to decline your offer with grace and dignity. Good luck. Hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number again? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Again, 866-422-5680. Next, we hear from Cheryl and Vern, a couple, 38 and 40, from Albany, New York. They write, Doc, we've been married for 11 years and we have two great kids, ages 4 and 7. We both have full-time jobs, so our family life together is at a premium. Lately, we've hit a rough patch and we seem to be fighting more than usual. We still love each other very much, but the sniping and bitchiness is getting us down. I know this is not specifically a sex question, but do you know how we could cut down on all this bickering or make it so we don't lose it with each other? Hey, you guys, I'm happy to add my two cents to your query about your relationship woes. In fact, I think you present a really good question, so few couples know how to fight fair. One of the reasons, no doubt, is that most of us don't even know there is such a thing as fighting fair, let alone practicing the method. So yes, I do have some suggestions on how to fight with each other without devastating each other. First thing, us humans tend to fight more when we're irritable. Stress and sleep deprivation make us irritable. And from the sound of it, you guys are definitely stressed and probably also sleep deprived. Your lifestyle is setting you up for confrontation, so no amount of fair fight training is going to make a dent in the amount you spat until there is some change in your lifestyle. In fact, I suggest that you not even attempt to embrace this fair fighting technique if you are not serious about integrating it into your lifestyle. It would be like committing to nonviolence while you're stocking up on guns and ammo. Every relationship has its bones of contention, and it's natural, even healthy, to want to hash things out. I think it's so much better to get things out in the open rather than let them fester all bottled up inside. Of course, there is a danger in exploding and letting things fly in every direction. Someone's liable to get hurt. So if you give your venting some structure, fair fighting technique, for example, you will be more likely to get your point across without bludgeoning your partner. Let's take a look at some of the basics. The way you word a complaint or concern will make a big difference. For example, I suggest you avoid you statements as much as possible. You statements tend to make your partner feel like he or she is to blame. You make me angry. You don't trust me. You're not making sense. You never take the time to compliment me anymore. You are always too busy for me and my needs. Instead, I suggest you use I statements that will reflect the way you feel. I feel angry when I hear things like that. I want you to trust me. I don't understand what you are talking about. I don't hear compliments from you anymore. I feel like I'm not important to you anymore. You see how, in the first instance, the you statements blame your partner. They also assume that he or she should know better, and that he or she is doing this on purpose just to annoy you. The problem with assumptions like these is that they're only making matters worse. They also put your partner in a really defensive posture. No, I didn't. That's ridiculous. I am too. You've got to be kidding. In the second instance, the I statements are more open-ended. They invite a response without putting your partner on the defensive. This is also a useful way of soliciting your partner to give you feedback. I'm not trying to make you angry. I want to trust you, but how can I? Let me put it another way. I know I should try harder with the compliments thing. I'm so swamped. I have a difficult time prioritizing everything these days. Another basic to fighting fair is giving concrete examples of what you're talking about. Let's say you're talking about money matters. That's always a big bugaboo in every relationship. Use I word statements along with an example. I felt like you just blew off the family budget when you made that purchase. I know you were thinking of the whole family when you bought it. It's just I would really like to have some input on major expenditures like this. How are we going to adjust the budget for next month to pay for this? You see how the concrete example demonstrates your concern without clobbering your partner with evidence. You also suggest you understand why the thing happened. And, most importantly, you offer a solution. That the two of you pull together as a team on further purchases, and that you both find a solution to this month's budget crisis. You know how sometimes you know exactly what you want to say, but it just doesn't come out right? This is more likely to happen in the heat of an argument. To short-circuit this dangerous hazard, I suggest that before either of you launches into a tirade against the other, you take some time to plan out what you want to say. Jot down some notes, bullet points, if you will. This, of course, also creates a natural cooling-off period. Remember, the goal of fighting fair is to make the situation better, not to escalate matters. You guys seem to be prone to fighting. Therefore, I suggest that you take a cue from those in the kink community. In negotiating a BDSM scene, the participants always agree on a safe word before the scenario begins. This safe word is a word that will be out of context in the scenario, or, in your case, the argument. This safe word is used when someone is reaching his or her limit in the bondage or discipline scene, or, in your case, when the fight is veering toward emotional violence. For example, let's say you guys decide on the word pickle. You'll find yourself in a spat, things are heating up, you are dangerously close to saying something very hurtful, and things that you will later regret. This is the time to employ the safe word. Or, let's say you are being browbeat and harangued, and you feel emotionally vulnerable. You don't want to react or turn up the volume, so you use the safe word. If you commit to a safe word and one of you uses it and the other ignores it, then that person is not only breaking the rules of fighting fair, he or she is guilty of domestic violence. And that ought never be tolerated. Get it? Got it? Good. Here are some other things for you to consider when you want to structure your arguments so as not to devastate your partner. The time to commit to always fighting fair should happen before there is a row. So I suggest that you sit down one quiet evening and pound out your own guidelines for fair fighting. You will also need to give these rules teeth. I mean, if there's no consequences for breaking an agreed upon rule, then what's the point? The object here is to put in place measures that will de-escalate the tensions, not fuel the flames. Pick up proper time and place for the fight. Don't bring up your problems when you have no time to talk through them. Right before you or your partner is leaving for work, for example. Don't fight when you're drinking. If things are coming to a head, but there's no time for a fair fight, commit to a concrete time later to take on the issue. Be sure you honor that commitment and not just avoid the fight. State your feelings honestly, without sarcasm or insults. If you postpone a fight, use that time before the scheduled fight to prepare yourself. Jot down the points you want to make. Delete anything that is intended to hurt or humiliate your partner. Stick to the issues at hand. Don't go bringing up things that happened in the past, even to make your point. Fair fighting is not about placing blame. It's about solving problems. Stick to I statements and stay away from you statements. Avoid words like always and never. You always do that. I never get what I need. This will help you avoid criticizing your partner's entire personality. Don't mind read. If you don't know how your partner feels or what he or she thinks, then ask. Incorporate positive statements and compliments along with your complaints. For example, make a sandwich: complaint, compliment, criticism. Like this. You're a lying son of a bitch. I love those shoes. You should eat shit and die. Okay, I made that last part up. But you could say something like, I sometimes feel so alone. I know you're trying to be more present. Is there any way that we can work it out that we have more quality time together to love and nurture one another? See, this sandwich technique will soften the blow of any complaint, and your partner will be less defensive. Finally, remember, you are not alone. All couples have their share of problems. No couple will ever see eye to eye on everything. But if you know how to fight fair, when fighting is called for, you will be able to structure your argument so that you'll diminish the damage done to your partner's ego. Good luck. Hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number again? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Write it down. 866-422-5680. Next, we hear from Green Guy 42 from Lowell, Massachusetts. Dr. Dick, I'm an African-American man who was reared in a very psychologically abusive and conservative Southern environment. I'm very inexperienced with relationships, dating, and sex. In fact, I've been celibate for the last 5 years, trying to figure out how I got so psychologically fucked up, and what to do about it. I was in therapy for quite a while, but I still have many issues to deal with, including trusting men. I would like to be in a healthy relationship, but I don't even know where to start. I feel that my personal life has been a total disaster. I want to change things around, but I feel utterly lost. Although I am professionally successful, I have serious issues with my body. I am somewhat overweight, but I have recently joined a gym to get into shape. I feel totally hideous and depressed. I am on medication, and I don't believe any guy would ever be interested in me. Please help. Darling, holy cow, you sure know how to let it all hang out, huh? Did you notice how many superlatives you used? Very abusive. Many issues. Total disaster. Serious issues. Totally hideous. To mention a few. It's clear to me, and probably to any other human who comes near you, that you are so not ready for a relationship. In fact, if you are as icky and psychologically fucked up as you say, if you can't trust anyone, if you are a dating klutz, if you are totally hideous and misshapen, then why not just give it up? Let it go and spare any other person the torture of being involved with you. You're right. What guy in his right mind would be interested in the likes of you? Okay, you see what I'm doing here? I'm joining the resistance. You want to pile it on yourself? Swell. I'll join you. I'll pile it on too, and together we'll heap all the insults and contempt until you can't stand it anymore, until you reach your tolerance for self-abuse and tell me and yourself to stop. And from what I can gather, that's going to take some piling on. Of course, you could always quit the self-abuse on your own, at any time. Seems to me 44 years of negative and undercutting behavior is plenty. Even for you. Listen, none of us is without our faults. Least of all me. But to navigate social situations, even casual ones, one needs to be able to judge what the traffic can bear. If you come on like gangbusters, like you did in your message to me, you are finished even before you begin. Whatever therapy you did in the past, it either didn't work or you didn't have any lasting effects. Next time, find a therapist that will challenge you, not stroke you. Find someone that will jump on your shit. Someone who will care enough about you to disallow you from hurting yourself with such cruel remarks about yourself. When I have a client like you in my private practice, I always lay down the law. For every self-critical thing you say about yourself, you must say something nice about yourself. That shuts the client up in a hurry. Once he or she is quiet enough to listen, we start pulling apart the tangle of their self-hatred. You were abused as a kid. Sadly, so are lots of kids. But that's in the past. I'm sure you have scars, but who doesn't have scar tissue? You don't know how to interact socially with others. Hey, that's a skill you can learn. You're fat and out of shape. You're going to the gym to address that. You're depressed, even on antidepressants. Well, no wonder. You're sick of yourself, and that has got to stop now. Before you consider asking anyone else to love you with all your flaws, you're going to have to learn to love yourself with all your flaws. If you can't do that, then don't expect anyone else to do it before you. Get off your pity pot and get to work. You say you are successful in your professional life. Frankly, I don't see how that's possible given the litany of your liabilities, but for the sake of argument, let's just say you're telling the truth. How did you come to be so successful in your professional life without at least some redeeming qualities? That is, unless you're a professional executioner, or a professional hitman, or a professional politician? You see, you can't have it both ways. If you have skill enough to make yourself a success in your professional life, then you have skill enough to make yourself a success in your private life. With the help of this new therapist, you know, the one you're going to get, the one who is not going to let you get away with any of your shit, you're going to learn how to marshal and channel your aptitudes that have made you successful in one area of your life to make you a success in other areas of your life as well. Good luck. Dr. Dick, that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number you keep talking about, what is it? Hey, it's 866-422-5680. Don't be shy. Let it fly. Moving right along, we next hear from Roman, who's 22 and writes from Kansas. I am 22 and I have cerebral palsy. My girlfriend has cerebral palsy too. You say you have experience working with people with disabilities. Do you know about how CP affects our balance and muscle control? Me and my girlfriend have difficulty having sex. Our bodies don't move like other people's. Most of the time we are in wheelchairs, and while sitting is okay, our stiff legs make conventional sex impossible. We have invented ways of getting one another off, but when it comes to intercourse, we are stumped. We've tried different things, but we can't get the right angle. We've looked for ideas on the internet, but nothing. Kudos to you, Roman, and your plucky girlfriend. You kids sound like you've got it going on. I'm really impressed. You're right. I have some experience with people with disabilities, particularly around the issue of sexuality. And I am familiar with the effects of cerebral palsy on one's balance and muscle control. So I think I can help you. However, I want you to help me, too. I think you could help me and my audience understand and appreciate your situation a little better. Here's why I think this. It's not often that I hear from such an articulate fellow in your particular circumstance. So I want to ask you a few questions. Anyone else out there in my audience who wants to chime in on this, please do. In the past, most of the people I've encountered who have disabling conditions like CP have been at the mercy of those who care for them in assisted living facilities. So would it be correct for me to guess that you and your girlfriend are living independently? It sounds that way to me. The reason I say this is that one of the most troubling problems folks like you guys have is finding private time and space for intimacies of whatever kind. Assisted living facilities are notorious for not giving or respecting a client's privacy. If you are in an independent living situation and you have enough privacy to engage in intimacies that can get you off, short of intercourse, how do you guys get one another off? Is this done while you're in your chairs? If you're actually getting naked with one another, and I hope you are, do you need assistance from someone to achieve this? Here's why I'm asking. If you're having a person assist you as far as getting you out of your clothes and into the sack with each other, would it be out of the question for either of you to ask this person to help you get into a position for fucking? I ask this because on one very special occasion, a couple I knew some years ago, a couple with cerebral palsy, asked me to assist them in their lovemaking. At first, I didn't know if I was up for the task. Not because I would be freaked out by gimps getting their groove on. Not at all. I was concerned that I wouldn't know what to do or how to do it. My friends, the couple, told me not to worry, that they would direct me if I helped them manage their limbs and coordinate their movements. I was honored by the request, so I accepted their invitation. We all really were nervous, especially me. They asked if I would be comfortable being naked with them. This really put me on the spot for sure. It's not that I was uncomfortable being naked. That's rarely an issue. But I was strangely uncomfortable being naked with them. Was it some kind of professional pride? Did I feel more secure being clothed? Less vulnerable that way? Hell, I don't know. They explained that they didn't want this to be some kind of clinical thing where I was being a therapist, albeit an unconventional therapist. In the end, I relented, and after a few minutes of feeling really awkward, we lost our inhibitions and got down to business. Just so you know, my friends were right. Had I kept my clothes on, the experience would have been very, very different. While I tried to be as unobtrusive as possible, I was remarkably able to experience, in the most intimate way, what it must be like to live in a body that doesn't respond like my body does. I felt like my friends' bodies were extensions of my body. And they said they felt the same way, that my body was an extension of their bodies. It was a communion like no other. My friends kept cracking jokes. Every time I'd topple over trying to get them, the lovebirds, into position, they'd say something like, "Is that what it's like having an able body?" Those bitches. No doubt, the humor and giggling helped take the edge off for us all. I know it helped me overcome being so self-conscious. I confess, I was a bit embarrassed to be the only able-bodied person present. What struck me most in all of this was the determination of my friends. I've never met anyone more dogged and tenacious. And all to get a little nookie, God bless them. We tried several positions. Luckily, my friends had upped the dose of their muscle relaxant medication, so they were a bit more pliable. One position that seemed to work particularly well was where my friends were lying on their side and facing each other. I helped the woman swing one of her legs over the guy. I was then able to scoot their pelvises together and guide his dick into her pussy. Then all I needed to do was bounce them a little. It was brilliant. Even though it was the hardest I ever worked for a fuck, and it wasn't even me who was doing the fucking. We were all completely exhausted by the experience. My friends were enormously grateful, and I was blissed out for sure. It took them days to recover, but at least they had achieved what they had so desperately wanted. Did they ever try intercourse again? I don't know. They may have discovered that fucking, especially if it takes so much concentration and energy, may not be worth it. Maybe they just realized that full-on fucking is not necessary for full-on sexual enjoyment. I mean, my friend was expert at eating out his girlfriend. All I had to do was help him into position, and she got off on it big time. Oh, and so did he, the randy little bugger. So, Roman, I didn't mean to go on and on like that. Sorry if I got off topic. I just wanted to tell you that story because I thought it might suggest to you and your girlfriend the idea of having someone help you guys fuck. It's worth a try, right? Good luck. Yikes! Look at the time. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. Look for the Video on Demand tab right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. And look for Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory Sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex, why, that's even better. Over and out.